Pick me up, pull him down, turn me round. Written by Looney Zero and read by Sunkitten Shash. An Only Friends Boston Nick fic. Rated mature. Additional tags include post-canon, reconciliation, Boston Defense Squad, and POV Boston. Summary. If this was a movie, the world would go silent when they lock eyes, with fall leaves swirling around them. But it's Boston, who's never had a romantic bone in his body, not even for Nick, and they're downtown in the city he's named for, amid fall leaves, sure, but mostly amid the clamor of blaring horns and shrieking tourists. Nick looks good. He looks happy, secure in his own skin in a way he never was when... Boston's glad he's doing well. That's a normal thing to think about an ex, or ex-friend, or whatever. In which Boston pretends not to care, and can't quite even convince himself. Chapter 1. Nick looks good. It's a stupid thought. Nick always looked good, even when he was wearing a ratty t-shirt and shorts he found on his bedroom floor. But if there's one thing Boston shouldn't be thinking about, it's Nick starfishing across his bed, ass in the air while he wiggled forward until he could reach whatever stupid clothes he tossed away when they were. Boston's not thinking about it. Nick looks good, he thinks again, forcing his internal voice even. He looks happy, secure in his own skin in a way he never was when... Boston's glad Nick's doing well. That's a normal thing to think about an ex, or ex-friend, or whatever. There's a boy with him, clinging to his arm and chattering away in Thai. He radiates innocent twink, and for a moment, Boston can perfectly envision how this could go. It would be so easy to break them up, and there's no way that kid is Nick's type, no matter how long it's been. Boston could just slide up to them, flash the kid a smile, let Nick see him watching. Remind Nick of, no, flirt with the kid a bit, convince him that Nick would be into it, take him to bed, and watch them both remember that this isn't what Nick's meant for. It would be so easy. But Boston's not that person anymore. Or, well, he's trying not to be. Isn't that what got him in trouble? Thinking that he knew his friends, that he could help, that they would be grateful. Or, in Aaron's words, being an arrogant ass who thinks he can do whatever he wants because he tells himself stories about how helpful he's being. She had been talking about fucking Chad. Been there, done that, not worth the mind-numbing small talk beforehand, but it had stuck. So, Boston should walk away. Mew would have walked away. The thought is almost more shocking than the sight of Nick. He hasn't thought about Mew in ages. But it's as if seeing Nick activates all that old muscle memory and, well, Boston did spend 4 years doing whatever Mew wouldn't, and doing it well. And so he finds himself standing in front of Nick. If this was a movie, the world would go silent while they locked eyes and fall leaves swirled around them. But it's Boston, who's never had a romantic bone in his body, not even for Nick, and they're downtown in the city he's named for, amid fall leaves, sure, but mostly amid the clamor of blaring horns and shrieking tourists. The thought almost makes him smile. Nick isn't smiling. He looks stunned, like he had forgotten Boston existed, like someone just pushed their cock into him with just barely enough lube and no warning. "Pee?" the twink says, tugging anxiously on Nick's arm. Nick doesn't look away from Boston, but he pats the kid's hand absently as he swallows. Boston. He sounds so stiff and formal that a corner of Boston's mouth ticks up before he can stop it. Nick. The silence should be awkward, but Nick's staring at Boston like he's trying to find the best camera angle, or like he's trying to puzzle out what's wrong with one of his cells. And Boston might not be trying to cause problems for Nick, but he sure as hell is going to enjoy the fact that he can still throw Nick off. So, really, the twink's probably the only one feeling awkward, and Boston's not going to look away from Nick long enough to check. But eventually the kid must tug on Nick's arm again or something, because his mouth snaps shut, and he tilts his chin up in a challenge. What are you doing here?
I live here, Boston says, which is close enough to true.
You live in New York, Nick says, and then visibly curses himself for acknowledging that he remembers anything about Boston. It would be so easy to rile him up further, to give him a sharp grin and watch him rise to the challenge. But Boston's determined to be nice and mature, so he just smiles blandly and says,
It's not that far by train. I'm just visiting for the weekend.
Nick nods. Boston can almost physically feel him pulling away, getting ready to say, Well, it was nice to see you. I hope it never happens again. If Boston was actually good, actually kind and selfless and all that shit, he would let Nick go. But he's just nice, and so Nick's going to drown in niceness.
Are you on vacation? You and...
He nods to the boyfriend. Nick jumps. This is Tucson, my cousin.
Cousin, Boston says.
He looks the kid over again, considering. They do look alike, now that he's looking. When he turns back to Nick, he's met with a face full of amusement. A single look, and he knows that Nick knows exactly what he assumed. He doesn't quite know how to feel about that. Next will be the joke warning Tucson away from Boston. Then they'll all laugh and go their separate ways. If they were still in college, Boston would absolutely have fucked the kid, never mind how Nick felt about it. But he's done his fair share of breaking in straight boys and, well, maybe he did learn something from everything with Chum and her asshole little brother. If Nick remembers any of that, he doesn't let it show. He doesn't leap in front of the kid to protect him from Boston's wiles, doesn't seem to pay him any attention at all. He just keeps looking at Boston. That was one of the first things Boston noticed about him. Like, sure, he was kind of cute, but cute is boring. Nick's gaze was anything but. Boston had felt it like a physical thing, even before the gutsy pic on his phone. He thinks, for the first time in ages, of that first photo he took of Nick, lying post-orgasm in Boston's bed like he belonged there. His eyes were softer then, but no less intense. But if thinking of Nick in Boston's bed is a bad idea, thinking about that photo is an abysmal one.
Nice to meet you, the kid chirps. I'm gonna go look at the ducks. Bye!
He vanishes into the crowd before Nick can say anything. Tucson rounds a tree and whips out his phone, frantically texting his best friend in all caps that P. Nick has reconnected with his long-lost love. Like hell is he going to let this golden blackmail opportunity pass.
So, Boston says,
before Nick can do anything stupid like leave.
Are you still living with...
Fuck, what's his name?
Sand?
It ought to be a safe topic, as far as any go, but Nick gives him a confused look. He moved in with Ray, like, 2 years ago.
You really didn't stay in touch with them at all?
Once upon a time,
Boston had appreciated Nick's directness. As if they'd want to talk to me. Nick opens his mouth, but before he can say anything, Boston asks, "So Ray and Sand are going strong, then?" Nick's face makes it clear he knows exactly what Boston's doing, but he lets it pass. "Strong enough," he says with a shrug. "Ray's not good enough for Sand, but what else is new?" Boston laughs, but Nick isn't smiling. He's finally sober, but it was a long road to get there.
"Ray's sober?
Damn, Boston didn't know he had it in him."
"For now," Nick says sourly.
"Sand gave me permission to run interference if he relapses again. Last time he said he'd leave, but folded immediately." Now that sounds like Ray's brand of dysfunction.
"And, Namjoon and her girlfriend broke up," Nick says,
like Boston had asked for a comprehensive update.
"August, or whatever her name was?"
"April," Boston says automatically. He'd liked her. Maybe actually more than he liked Chum.
"Who dumped who?"
"April did," Nick says. "She was apparently pretty brutal about it. Namjoon was super broken up." He darts a look at Boston under his eyelashes, all coy, like he had ever hidden his dislike of Boston's friends. "As far as I can tell, she wasn't exactly wrong."
"What did she say?"
Boston asks, just to humor him. "I think her exact words were, sanctimonious, judgmental bitch who cares more about everything looking perfect than giving a damn."
"Yeah, that's true."
Nick smiles, a fleeting glimpse of a razor's edge. But when he looks at Boston again, his eyes are uncertain. Fine. Maybe Boston's curious despite himself.
"And Mew?"
"Top proposed a couple of months ago," Nick says, eyeing Boston warily for a reaction. Boston doesn't give him one. No one's really sure they'll make it to the wedding, though.
"Don't tell me Top cheated again."
"Not Top."
Boston's jaw literally drops.
He snaps it shut with a too loud clack, before Nick starts thinking he cares.
"Mew cheated?"
Nick nods, the corner of his mouth twitching like he's suppressing a smile. Boston has no such qualms, letting his incredulous laughter take him. That makes Nick break, too, laughing with such abandon that it makes Boston's breath stutter. Or maybe that's just laughter. A biker barrels towards them, and before Boston can think, he grabs Nick's arm and tugs. Nick comes sprawling into him, his laughter dying in shock. It's another one of those moments when the chaos of the busy downtown should fade away and they should stare romantically into each other's eyes. But instead, the bicyclist just flips Boston off and moves on, ringing their bell aggressively at the next person in their path. Nick startles away from Boston with a jerk, and Boston lets him. Nick can have all the motherfucking space he needs. Nick glances at Boston and sighs. "We might as well sit down," he says. "It's a long story." Boston doesn't give a shit, but Nick takes his arm and tugs him over to a bench. And, well, it is tempting to know exactly how badly Mew fucked up. "They ran the hostel for about a year after graduation," Nick says, once they're settled on a bench. "This guy, I think he was literally their first guest. He was really obviously into Mew. Then he turned into a repeat customer, and, well." He sneaks a glance at Boston, as though Boston would be looking anywhere else. "Top really isn't that great in bed." "Well, then."
"Nothing special," Boston agrees, and grins at how obviously Nick wants to throw something at him.
But he doesn't owe Nick shit, so he just says,
and me who fucked the guy?
Yeah, Nick says. Or, well, first he really obviously tried to make Top jealous, and it kind of worked. And Nemchum got overly involved, and Sand wouldn't let Ray even talk about it, so I heard way too much about it instead. It was a mess. But eventually, yeah.
Did Top find out? Boston asks,
pushing aside the fact that apparently Nick and Ray talk now.
Oh yeah, Nick says with a nervous laugh.
I don't think he's ever actually confronted Mew about it, but he popped the question, like, a day later. I think he thought he had to pin Mew down or something.
Fucking pathetic, Boston says with a snort. At least Mew took some revenge.
Nick shifts, and Boston turns to face him fully. He knows that look. That's Nick's guilty but not really look. The one he gave Boston after he fucked that boss of his.
You didn't.
What? Nick says. But Boston's on to him.
You fucked him?
Maybe I wanted to see what all the fuss was about, Nick snaps. And Boston can't help but grin like a proud mother. Nick rolls his eyes and turns away, but not before Boston sees his lips twitching into a smile.
Anyway, Nick says, clearing his throat,
that's basically everything you missed.
What about you?
Boston can't quite make it sound casual. He has to know. Nick looks good, looks happy and calm and mature, and as if everything that happened in college is barely a distant memory. Boston remembers him wrecked, sobbing as he begged Boston for forgiveness, crying when Boston bullied his cock in too soon, incandescent with rage over some shitty thing his professor said, trying so hard to be cool when he seduced his customer and his mentor at work, and probably half the fucking neighborhood. So maybe Boston does remember him. Maybe Boston has been missing him, even if he didn't realize it until just now. Maybe they really were friends, despite it all. Maybe Nick did break his heart, just a little. Nick startles, as though he wasn't expecting the question, and that's more insulting than any shit he could say about Boston's former friends. I'm fine, he says. Nothing all that exciting.
Nothing?
Nick shrugs, unwilling to say more, and, well, Boston can take a hint, thank you very much. He's getting ready to cut his losses, to say, nice to see you, have a good life, when Nick says, hesitantly, I dated Dan for a couple of years. It takes a moment for Boston to place the name, and his lips twitch despite himself. He's tempted to ask if the shine wore off once Dan was no longer Nick's boss, but he's trying to be nice. But asking questions is nice, right? Within reason.
Did it end before or after you fucked Top?
Nick laughs, a genuine sound of delight, and Boston remembers that Nick didn't always like him nice.
Before. Of course, Boston says, nodding. You wouldn't want to cheat on your boyfriend when you're helping someone cheat on his fiancée.
Nick punches him in the arm, but doesn't grin the way Boston expected, looking oddly contemplative instead. So instead of pushing back, Boston waits.
He warned me about you, you know, Nick says eventually.
Top, when I tried to get him to back off after, you know.
You what? You didn't know?
I tried to blackmail him, told him to stay away from you or else I'd tell Mew.
Damn.
And Top thought Nick was the one who needed warning in that situation?
Nick grins. He tried to tell me not to get involved with you, he says.
Said you were nasty.
It shouldn't hurt.
Boston doesn't give a fuck about Top, and it's not like he doesn't know what they all thought of him,
but he's still hit with a strong desire to chop off Top's dick. "I told him I was nasty, too," Nick says, casual as anything, and Boston nearly breaks his neck, whirling to look at him.
"You?"
Nick looks so fucking innocent, staring up at Boston through his lashes, and Boston realizes with a sinking feeling that he's totally going to sleep with Nick if he asks.
"Fuck."
"That's what ended things with Dan," Nick says. "He was super nice, but..."
"Hotter as a boss than a boyfriend?"
Boston means it as a joke, but Nick's eyes are dead serious when he says,
"Basically, yeah."
"Well, fuck. You're the first person to get that," Nick says. "Like, that's a normal thing to say to your kinda sorta ex. Sam thought I was insane."
Boston shrugs. "Maybe you are.
Maybe they both are.
But at least you know who you are and what you like."
"Exactly," Nick says. "You taught me that, you know?" Boston is on the verge of doing something very, very stupid when Nick's fucking cousin bounds over.
"Pete, we've gotta go, or you'll be late to your interview."
Nick swears under his breath, startling away from Boston, and then trying to pretend he always meant to stand up that fast.
"Interview?" Boston says.
Nick won't meet his eyes, so he turns to the kid.
"Yeah, didn't P. Nick tell you? That's why we're here. The company flew him all this way."
"He didn't say," Boston says. There's a dangerous pressure building in his chest.
"It's a long shot," Nick says, and once upon a time, it would have been Boston's place to push back on that, to remind Nick of how talented he is. But Nick doesn't want that from him. Nick, apparently, doesn't even want him to know there's a chance they'll be on the same continent. On the other hand, his cousin, what was his name, is a fount of information.
"P, you live in New York, right? My partner is going there for an internship. Could I give him your number?"
"Till," Nick hisses. They both ignore him.
"Of course," Boston says.
It's easy to slide into professionalism, especially with Nick glaring daggers.
"What's the internship?"
Till waves a hand.
"Something fashion-related. I can't understand it at all. But he's been looking for a, like, queer music venue, and you seem like you'd know one. Something aero-friendly."
Beside Boston, Nick goes tense. Boston smiles, the picture of a nice and polite P, and hopes Nick feels it like a punch when he says,
"Oh, of course. I don't go where I'm not welcome."
"Your aero?" the kid says, brightly oblivious. "That's awesome! People always get so weirded out by me and poor, just because he's aero-ace and I'm not."
"My roommate's relationship is like that," Boston says.
Is Nick breathing? He can't tell.
"Had to punch a guy last month because he kept harassing her about cheating."
"A hug," Two says. "I'm glad you punched him."
Boston likes this kid. They exchange numbers, chatting away like old friends, while Nick stands next to them like a stump. Did he think of Boston when his cousin showed up with a partner uninterested in romance? Boston doesn't do labels. Who the fuck puts themselves in a box like that on purpose? But, well, it was nice to learn there are other people who just aren't ever going to fall in love. Eventually, they really do have to leave so Nick can make his interview. Tosin ducks off to the side to pull up the directions, and Boston turns back to Nick. He's ready for an angry tirade or a distant farewell, but Nick, he looks flayed open. He tries to pull himself together, but utterly fails. God damn him, it gets to Boston, drawing him a step closer before he can stop himself.
"I don't want to keep missing you," Nick blurts out.
Boston flinches. You ended it.
Ended us, he almost says.
I know, Nick says. And, I mean, it wouldn't have worked, not then. But, I've been meaning to apologize for how I did it. I was crueler than I should have been.
Is this just because I said I'm aromantic? Boston demands.
Because if it is, Nick can take his apology and shove it.
No, Nick says, eyes wide, like it never even occurred to him. No, I've been thinking about this for a long time.
Well then.
Thanks, Boston says after a moment.
He means to leave it at that, but somehow his mouth keeps going.
You really fucked me up, you know.
Communication. Sasha would be so proud of him.
Nick grimaces.
I figured that out eventually.
Eventually?
Was it not fucking obvious after all that? You know I'm stupid about this stuff, Nick says with a huff that could almost be a laugh. I get too in my head, and you are so, you know, you, that I thought I couldn't hurt you.
What a fucking idiot.
But, idiot or not, Nick's always been the braver one of them. Can I text you? He asks, his voice soft, but his gaze steady. Especially if I get this job. I mean, I don't know anyone else here, and
why? Boston interrupts. I'm not going to be your boyfriend.
Nick shoots him a glare. I don't want a boyfriend.
Forgive me if I'm doubtful.
I'm just asking if I can text you.
And it was just sex before, Boston retorts.
What are they even doing here? Maybe they could have had a night of reunion sex. Maybe it would have even been disappointing. And then Boston could get some fucking closure. But texting with Nick from 4 hours away? Boston's not adverse to a little pain in his sex life, but he's not that much of a masochist. Nick looks thoughtful when Boston meets his eyes again. You should talk to Ray, he says.
What the hell?
What the hell?
I mean it when I say I don't want a boyfriend, Nick says. Ray's had a front row seat to my shit for the last few years. He could confirm that.
There's just one problem with that, Boston says, over-enunciating like he's talking to a toddler. Ray's not going to talk to me.
Nick just shrugs, the fucker. You don't know until you try.
I tried with you, Boston wants to say. I tried to be what you needed, and even that wasn't enough. Just because seeing you again reminded me that I liked you once upon a time doesn't mean I want to go back to that part of my life.
He misses you, Nick says softly, and Boston's heart almost stops. Last time he was in rehab, well, it got messy, but one of the things he talked about was you. And, well, Nick shrugs. I could relate. The fuck he could. Boston's ready to argue, but Tucson catches his eye and gestures wildly at the time. Boston sighs and says,
Your cousin has my number. He can do whatever the fuck he wants with it.
Nick beams, and before Boston can brace, throws his arms around Boston's neck. He smells the same, and for one awful moment, Boston's back in college before it all fell apart, when he had his friends at school and Nick in his bed. His body's warm in the cool fall air. It would be so, so easy to just...
Boston drops his arms. You're going to be late.
Nick looks at the time and swears, fumbling at his phone but not moving away. Fuck, Teal! I called a cab. Nick's biting his lip, and the park is busy around them, but not that busy, and if Teal called a cab, then they probably have a bit more time. Before he can think it through,
Boston's grabbing Nick's wrist and pulling him into the shade and relative privacy of one of the trees. Nick makes an indignant squawk, but melts as soon as Boston shoves him against the tree trunk. They don't have much time, so Boston focuses on taking Nick apart, using every trick Nick used to love and a few new ones he picked up in New York. Nick, fucking whore, grabs at him greedily, slinging a leg over his hip and probably stretching Boston's collar out with how hard he's grasping. To Boston's annoyance, even just kissing Nick is better than some of the sex he's had. Everything would be so much easier if Nick was a little less good. They have to separate all too soon, when Tucson clears his throat extremely loudly. Boston takes his time pulling away, delighting in how Nick automatically chases his mouth. With his eyes closed and his mouth as red as the leaves on the tree, he looks like a cross between a porn star and a painting. Boston's fingers itch for a camera. Nick straightens, but his grip on Boston's wrist is iron. "Text me back, or I'll do something insane like fly to New York," he says, and bites Boston's lip before he can reply. He doesn't wait for a response, pushing Boston away and running for the cab. Tucson flashes Boston a thumbs up and follows. And then Boston's left in the middle of Boston fucking Commons, with his dick hard and his heart pounding. Before he can lose his nerve, he opens WhatsApp and navigates to his long dormant thread with Ray. He snaps a picture of the fall leaves and sends it. His finger pauses at the unlabeled thread that once bore Nick's name, but only for a moment. Nick will text, or he won't. After a moment, he sends the same picture to Aaron, who is at least guaranteed to respond. "OMG, Boston in Boston!" she writes back. "Have fun! Be safe, winky face." Boston touches his lip absentmindedly, where it's still smarting from Nick's bite. You'd think he'd have learned by now that nothing about Nick is safe, but, well. "No promises," he writes back. Chapter 2. Author's note. I played around with starting this fic in a couple of different places, including showing a bit more of Boston's life in NYC. This chapter and the next are disconnected snippets that it didn't make sense to include in the main thing, but that I still like. They're only very minimally proofread, so please forgive any roughness. Afterwards, Boston leaves and puts the past behind him. He has no reason to go back to Bangkok, no reason to speak Thai outside of the ever more infrequent calls with his dad. He makes friends in New York, people to get drinks with, or to model for him. A friendly acquaintance here, a colleague there, a cute guy who took Boston's blank reaction to being asked out in stride, and slowly, they begin to knit Boston's new life together. There are hookups, of course. One-night stands, and thank fuck New York gays know better than to expect a relationship to follow from every fuck. Always at Boston's tiny shoebox apartment, never anyone who's seen his art, never leaving anyone alone long enough to bug his shit. The walls are thin, but the blackout curtains are thick, and Boston's quieter these days, in bed and out of it. People like him, but no one here claims to know him fully, and thank fuck for that. He learns English words they didn't teach him in school, words like photo term and swear word, and eventually words like demisexual and aromantic. He must make a face at that, because Aaron laughs at him. Is it so inconceivable that someone might not want to fuck everything that moves? "Yes," he almost says. "Yes, what the fuck? If you're just built that way, what gives you the right to judge the rest of us?" But while Aaron's a self-described total bitch sometimes, she never turns her sharp tongue on her friends. Her hair was short and spiky and bright orange, instead of long and wavy and brown. And the first time they met, she went on a drunken rant about how people always think lesbians are so soft and pure and shit, and how she just wants someone to fuck her nasty and not want to U-Haul in the morning. So Boston pushes the past aside and just shrugs. "People get way more fucked up about the aromantic thing," Sasha says from their chair. "Love is what makes us human and all that shit. Like there's nothing more to life than meeting one person and settling down with a white picket fence and 2.5 kids." "Aw, babe," Aaron coos. "Are you saying you don't want to move upstate with me?" Sasha kicks her, and Boston laughs. They're easy together, is the thing, despite the fact that their relationship makes no sense on the surface. Sasha doesn't want to be romanced or to fuck, and Aaron still sluts around as much as Boston does. They don't go on dates or always hang out as a pair. But Aaron's always Sasha's plus one at their bullshit family events, and at the end of a night out, Sasha's the one Aaron comes home to. It's nice. Boston's happy for them, in a vindictive sort of way. "See," he thinks sometimes when he sees them cuddling on the couch. "See, it is possible." Chapter 3. And why the Amtrak to Boston? It is, like most things in Boston's life these days, the kid's fault. The kid's fault. The kid deserves the capital letters, even if he's only a few years younger than Boston and has been in the States practically as long. But he is, undeniably, a kid, full of energy that Boston definitely lacked at that age, and a hopeless faith that the world can change for the better. They met through the kid's boyfriend, who's also a baby, but at least is a much saner one. Aaron says he has the most apt name she's ever heard, and takes great delight in calling him "my sweetheart" every time she sees him. It started when Boston was hired to take photos for a new class of interns at some big company. Rich white kid after rich white kid, and then the obvious diversity hire, a deaf Thai immigrant. The kid had been impressively cool and collected amidst the chaos, and before Boston knew exactly what he was doing, he was introducing himself in the rudimentary Thai sign language he learned in school. The kid absolutely lit up, hands moving far more smoothly than Boston's, as he introduced himself as Hart, a rising senior from a school upstate, in the city for the summer for this internship, and did Boston know where to find good Thai food? Boston did not. This was, apparently, unacceptable. By the time the photo shoot ended, Hart had texted his boyfriend, and thus ended Boston's nice, simple separation of his Bangkok and New York lives. Liming had extremely strong opinions about, well, everything, but especially food. He and Hart dragged Boston to restaurant after restaurant that summer, demanding to know what he thought of this dish or that, and wasn't that guy in Hart's intern class an asshole? At first glance, Liming was loud where Hart was quiet, spoiling for a fight where Hart would rather smooth things over. But as Boston snapped photo after photo of them in the muggy summer heat, he began to see the times that Liming was quiet, the way that Hart could start or stop one of his rants with a press of the hand. The way that Hart rarely pushed back in the moment when someone is rude to him or Liming, but would tear them to shreds later, showing them up in an important meeting or leaving scathing reviews as an aggrieved customer when Liming's boss was a dick. They were glued at the hip, but somehow never made Boston feel like a third wheel. Liming was appalled to learn that Boston had never been to Boston. "It's so close, you have to go!" The start of Hart's semester was no deterrent. Somehow, Liming was even more annoying over text. And so,
just as Boston's been dragged to practically every Thai place in Manhattan. To Boston he goes. Penn Station's a mess, though everyone assures him that it used to be much worse. The ebb and flow of the crowds makes him itch for his camera, but he doesn't pull it out yet. There will be time enough for that later. He weaves through the crowd, pushing past a family of tourists and nearly tripping over their stroller. The mom glares at him, and he rolls his eyes before pressing forward. The tourist season should be dying down soon, but never soon enough. They've been everywhere. On the subway, at his urban photography class's exhibition, at the bar where one of his MBA classmates celebrated his birthday last weekend. And then the week before, Aaron's family had been in town, so he spent all weekend smiling brightly at them and pouring drinks for Aaron as soon as they went back to their hotel. If Le Ming had insisted on Boston, Aaron was the one who shoved him out the door. "You've been a huge bitch all month, and I know it's not because you need to get laid.
I haven't brought anyone home in ages."
"Oh, please. You and Brad weren't subtle, sneaking off when my parents cornered me in the kitchen. As if I wouldn't notice you fucking my brother."
"What makes you think I was the one doing the fucking?"
"Oh my god. Ew. I'm not thinking about you and Brad. What the fuck? The point is, you need to get out of this apartment. Or better yet, out of the city. Go, I don't know, fuck a tree upstate or something. Just get some distance from whatever the hell bug crawled up your ass." And so here Boston is, off to see the city he was named after, the kid blowing up his phone demanding pictures of the foliage. At least it'll let him switch up his response to the ever-present, "Oh my god, your name's Boston? Like the city? That's so cool!" As the train begins to move, Boston begrudgingly admits that Aaron and the kid were right. It's good to get some time to himself, to just be a nameless face in the crowd. He'll have to finish his reading on the way back, but for now, he has nothing to do but stare out the window and just be. The end. Thanks for listening.